Video game bang, video game bang, video game bang. Mega Ran. Live from the sack, it's the live, it's a fact. I'm putting rhymes on this track to put my guys on the map. Cause they giving you the latest on everything on your playlist. This bet the safest from basements to greatness. Updates, geek news, tech talk, and reviews. They can summarize it so you ain't gotta breeze through. Listen once and you're forever fans. And I'm not saying it because their theme song features Mega Ram. Might think you fly, but ain't nice as my guys. Got eyes on the prize. So like and subscribe. We back in the booth. I think that they gon' eat this up. The ultimate source of all geek media. Other podcasts, they just don't match up. Need proof? You can check the archives and catch up. Stats off the chain. We have rearranged the game. It'll never be the same. Now it's time to feel the bang.
Bang! What is up, everybody? Corey Vincent here, and this is a new episode of Video Game Bang, episode 502, I believe. Yeah, it's a lot of shows, and joining me from a lot of those shows and many more in the future, Curtis Fisher, what's up?
What up, what up? Man, I'm hyped to talk about some Spidey.
Yeah!
Yeah, Mr. Parker.
I'm so glad there's people to talk about this with now. I saw it just a few hours ago, so I'm fresh, ready. I have questions to go.
Okay.
I'm really fresh.
We're going to get into this.
Yes, we are.
But, you know, Curtis, we'd be fools to do an episode about movies.
Right.
And not have a filmlosopher.
Look
at this guy. Fast.
Look at that.
Eddie Villanueva from the Filmlosopher.
I'm glad to be back, guys. It's always fun to be on your guys' episodes. And you know what? I'm ready to talk about this. We actually talked about this movie on our show, so looking to bring some of my thoughts here.
Yeah, I'm excited to have you. I'm a little disappointed we didn't get the Eddie Villanueva famous intro, though. So can we try one more time? I'll introduce you.
Go for it.
I listen to your show, so I know like the theme song pretty much by heart. I'm not going to go through the whole thing.
All right, go for it.
The Filmlosopher.
Hello, and welcome to another exciting episode of VGB, Video Game Bang.
Dang, he's so good.
Nice.
He's good.
On the spot.
Another Sacramento podcaster. She's going to be helping us fill in some of the comic sides of this whole thing, because it is a comic book movie, so we have to bring comic book specialists, so Curtis has That's someone true. To talk to. Usually he talks to us, and we just go, yeah. Curtis
There's
Hickman.
There's a lot of nodding. I've seen it quite a bit. It's just aggressive nodding, and that slight gaze turned down on the computer from Corey, so I've seen it quite a bit.
So what podcast are you doing these days?
First off, hi guys, I'm Amy.
I introduced you.
No, you didn't.
I didn't? Did I forget that part?
No.
Well, you just started talking, so.
I do that.
We're just excited to get this show on the road. That's it.
we want pictures of Spider-Man. There you go.
Yeah, we'll get there.
Anyway, I'm Amy, also affectionately known for VGB. I'm Amelia. And I am one of the Capeless Crusaders and I almost forgot my other podcast, guys. This is
Dame Patrol.
Curtis filling in the gaps.
I'm like, I listen
to it, so I know.
Yes, I'm on Dame Patrol. Hot Dame.
Oh. Dame Patrol. That's a new one. What's that one about?
So it's actually three ladies. We're just taking a look at the news, cues, and reviews of all things in geekdom. So we've covered anime, Emerald City Comic Con, ships, as in you're shipping different characters together. That was an entertaining episode. We did a couple of reviews, and right now we're on a little bit of a hiatus for life happening, but we will be back soon, because there is plenty of nummy things to read and do and review.
Well, wow. Eddie, Filmosopher Eddie did hit the nail on the head. We are going to be talking about Spider-Man this episode. You know, it's new, it's hot. This will entail some spoilers at some point.
At some point,
in which we will give you guys the notification for spoilers. But I think we're going to kind of just start by talking about it in a broad sense, a broad stroke review. And I have questions because I went in with very high expectations.
Yeah, same here.
Really?
Because me and Corey were talking a little bit before we went on the air, and I was telling him one of my biggest issues about this movie before even getting into the actual movie itself was, hearing how many people were going on and on and on about how great this movie is, how people who were reviewing it saying, "Oh, it's so great,
better than Endgame."
And then, well, I walked into the theater, and the rep for the press screening was like, "Well, I haven't seen it yet, but the people that I know are saying it's the best Marvel movie this year so far, and that even includes Endgame. So who knows?" Blah, blah, blah. I'm like, that's a high bar to hurdle.
Very high bar. Yeah.
Like, you're talking about the movie that ultimately took the entire storyline for the past 10 years and took the culmination of all that heart and put it into a 3-hour film. You're saying this movie, put out by Sony, who also put out the Emoji Movie,
yeah,
is going to serve us something that's going to be better than Endgame. So yeah. I came in already with the expectation of, like, if this doesn't even hit somewhere on the level of perfection, I'm not going to enjoy it. So yeah, that's just plain and simple.
I think that's just a thing, a buzzword now that people are going to say, now that we have such a measuring stick that sticks out. Like, same, like, Titanic came out in 1990, and still, when a movie's really good, I hear people say, it's not as good as Titanic, bro.
Right.
Like, Avatar was good, but it wasn't good as, you know, Titanic. So, I mean, I think every movie from now on is going to be like, okay, but how's it stack up to Endgame?
Right.
You know? Oh, no doubt.
It's a new benchmark.
So I guess we'll just start going around. Robin, I want to hear Curtis. What did you think about the new Spider-Man movie?
Overall, because again, we're not at the spoiler point yet. But overall, I thought it was really, really good. Same thing as Eddie was saying. I was hearing a lot of hype, and that it was like really, really high up there. Like it was, you know, like greatness. And it's not that I thought that it couldn't be. I really enjoyed Homecoming. I felt like Homecoming was a little bit better than this one, in my personal opinion.
Oh, yeah.
Or at least I enjoyed it a little bit more.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I would say it wasn't great, but it was really, really, really good. And the part that I leaned into the most was kind of like the teen romance elements of it, which I didn't come there for that.
Yeah.
But, you know, John Watts, I believe that is the mm-hmm. name of the director.
The director.
He invokes so much of like those old like Robert Zemeckis and John Landis movies from the 80s.
Yeah.
So I leaned into that part, and they hit all those beats like really, really well.
That's funny because as Eddie was saying, we were talking beforehand, right. And he mentioned that he thought this movie had a feel of like one of those Brat Pack.
Like John Hughes.
Yeah.
John Hughes. Yeah, that's another one. Yeah.
Yeah, you're looking at something like Pretty in Pink, you know, not so much Breakfast Club, but, huh?
This was not Pretty in Pink.
Well, the vibe of it being like about high school students who are looking to meet love interests and trying to create that whole love connection. Like, you take the very basic elements of this movie, not to take over what you're saying, but just in the general sense, you take the basic premise of this movie and eliminate the Spider-Man part, and you have a John Hughes movie.
Yeah.
I mean, just in all honesty, I mean, 17 Candles, this is 17 Candles, you know, without Spider-Man, so.
Right.
But
I agree.
Candles. 16, 17, they're all the same.
16 candles?
I was upgrading. I was giving it a better.
You just don't care.
Shout out to Molly Ringwald, right? She's from Roseville. She's from Roseville.
Is she?
Oh, yeah.
She's got that Roseville look to her.
Yeah. My buddy is friends with her parents, actually.
Oh, which part of Roseville are we talking about?
Amy, what did you think? Give us your breakdown. What did you think before you showed up, and then how did you leave the theater feeling?
So, especially when it comes to Spider-Man.
Spider-Man.
Yeah.
All the Spider-Man. Actually, I don't rate them against Endgame because that's in a category of its own. So coming in, I actually had lesser expectations, and it's mostly because of Into the Spider-Verse, what that impacted. So I can't see another Spider-Man movie without that type of connection, and the story was great. So it was good. It was fun. I have some quips, qualms, and queries all along that line with the way that it went. But again, there was the part that I actually started connecting to was that's gonna get in spoiler territory.
Well, then don't spoil it.
We'll get there.
There was a lot of emotional sections that I really connected with on a deeply personal level, and
oh my gosh, we turned
we
turned NPR real
quick.
Did
we watch the same movie?
I don't know. Did we?
Maybe not. So before we get into spoiler territory again, just for people listening who haven't seen it yet and want to, we're not going to spoil it. You will know when we're about to spoil this thing.
Yes.
But I just want to ask everybody around the room, as far as Spider-Man franchises go, this is like the third one in 15 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How does this one, now that it's two in, stack up to the others?
I like it better.
I'm on that boat.
I don't know.
Well, is it Spider-Man 3 dancing down the street?
No, but it's definitely not better than Spider-Man 2 with Doc Ock.
Yeah.
Like, if we're looking at as a whole, like, because Amy kind of hits on a really good point. If you're not going to compare it to the MCU, at least compare it to other Spider-Man movies. Mm-hmm. And you're looking at, or Spider-Man entities. Like, when we did our review, we compared it not only just to the other movies, but even the cartoon series, to the comic books, and to the video games.
Okay.
Like, the video games, you got the PlayStation 1 game, you have the PS2 game that followed the actual movies, whatever. And taking all that, I still feel like Spider-Man 2 with Tobey Maguire and
Alfred Molina
as Doc Ock,
it's one of my favorite
made movies. Much more of an impact in terms of a comic, quote-unquote, comic book movie than I think this one, and especially The Amazing Spider-Man, did.
Ooh, yeah.
I mean, nobody wants to see Paul Giamatti do a Russian accent ever again.
No, I'm good off that.
So, no. I don't know. Like, for me, this one is good, but it's not better than that, if we're looking at comic book movies.
Yeah.
I think the one part you can't argue with, I think Tom Holland is the best embodiment of Spider-Man, though.
Yeah.
Like, he's the most sincere, I think, when it comes to right in that pocket. Oh, my gosh. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off, Corey.
No, you didn't. I wanted to hear what you had to say.
I meant to cut you off. I feel like Tom Holland is the best Spider-Man, but I don't feel like he's the best Peter Parker. And that will come later down the line when we start to get into spoilers. I'll explain why I feel that way.
That's a really interesting.
Because I agree with you. If we're talking about best Spider-Man movie, just like pound for pound, I think Spider-Man 2 is still the best Spider-Man movie we've had. Mm. But if we're weighing the three, you know, with, what's his name?
Andrew Garfield,
Tom Holland, and Tobey Maguire. I feel like collectively I enjoy this version of it more than the other. I would say this version, Tobey Maguire, and then I have Andrew Garfield as the last one.
I think that's reasonable.
I think that is reasonable.
In live action, I'm fairly connected with that as well.
Okay.
Except Spider-Verse.
Spider-Verse
I put on top.
It is the top.
To be honest, I think that's the most fun I've had with a Spider-Man movie.
With Spider-Man per se or with a Spider-Man movie.
Okay.
Because then you're looking at, like, is Jake Johnson a better Spider-Man or Peter B. Parker than Andrew Garfield or Tobey Maguire or Tom Holland?
Because now we have all the different... Then Peter Porker a better
Peter
version?
Porker, yeah. Because that's where that gets a little muddy.
I'm saying this just because I know it'll probably shock most people. As much as I enjoyed the Into the Spider-Verse movie, actually, it comes third. I still have Tom Holland above it, and I still have Tobey Maguire, and then I would put Spider-Verse there, and then Andrew Garfield.
But don't you not like animated, computer-generated cartoons?
I would go as far as to say that I had love for that movie. No. I enjoyed it very much. That's probably one of my favorite animated movies that I've ever seen. But even still, I would still put it that low in the Spider-Man.
I agree with him.
Chad is angry.
I was watching one today. Like I was over at a friend's house, and they turned on classic Toy Story.
Mm-hmm. Aww.
And then like I got like 15 minutes into it, and I was like, this is the best. Like, this is like it came out in 1995 and still didn't look terrible.
Right.
It looked incredible. And then that classic storyline, I was saying quotes that I had buried in the recesses of my mind.
There's a snake in the water hole.
Yeah, like all those.
The word I'm looking for, I can't say, because there's preschool toys right here. Like, who says that kind of stuff, especially in a Disney movie?
That was so good.
I was laughing, though, because someone in chat said, Webb looks totally different.
Oh, yeah. A little different, a little darker.
Dark web.
The dark
web. I am the dark web. But I don't know. Like, for me, I agree to a certain extent on what you're saying, and obviously we'll get into that in a little bit, but I think in terms of Tom Holland, I do have to say, like, Tom Holland, this iteration of Peter Parker is probably the best we've seen collectively in terms of portraying the proper Spider-Man. The one that mirrors more of the comic books rather than just what studios want or producers or directors want. I think this one has a much more, as Amy said, a much more sincere Peter Parker, a much more guilt guilted type Peter Parker who has to carry all these things. We haven't even gotten to the point where in Peter Parker's storyline within the MCU where he begins to confront the death of his uncle. Mm-hmm. Like, that's still something we haven't even come up against.
Yeah.
Which there's a little Easter egg in this one, too, in relation to
with his suitcase.
Yeah. Well, I wasn't going to say
we just hit, spoilering, we bro. Just hit the 15-minute mark of the episode, so I think this
and we
is
haven't
a
even
good,
talked about the movie yet.
Yeah, I think this is a good time to give everybody the warning. So I hope you've enjoyed the show up to this point if you aren't interested in spoilers. But we are going to start spoilers. Transforming it into a spoiler zone.
Spoilers. Yeah.
So,
I can't believe they killed Peter Parker.
So what? I know. Why did they think now was the time to do?
Well, they assassinated his character. That's for sure.
No.
Wow.
You're a little dramatic over there. Wow. Today.
Snaps for days.
Snaps. You mean blips for days?
Oh. That was just weird.
Yeah, I thought definitely could have came.
Also,
up with
the comic
name.
Sans on that was weird.
Blips. Yeah.
Blips.
They started calling so blips in. And at least where Peter Parker's from is what they're calling the period of time, the 4 or 5 years where people disappeared.
Yep, the five years, the blip.
From the snap.
Ultimately, this movie takes a more, like we I had talked about with Corey, this takes a bit more of a comedic look at the snap itself. It's like, oh, so, you know, hey, we were gone for 5 years, but we're back.
And guess what? It's so funny. None of us have houses anymore.
Oh, my gosh. Like, yeah, we're now back 5 years later. We're now back in the school year that we were, you know, in 5 years ago.
And we have to take our midterms again.
Exactly.
It's not fair.
It's like, oh, you know, everybody who was missing family and struggling for 5 years, we're not going to talk about them. We're just going to talk about how we were gone and we're back like that.
Yeah. So they kind of, it was, I like how they dealt with it, though, because the tone of this movie wasn't going to be like super serious.
Mm-hmm. No.
And that's a very heavy topic, and I hope they explore it better in other movies, but this is supposed to be from the perspective of a Gen Zer who's already moved on to the next thing.
Yeah. So
they start to open the movie on Whitney Houston's I Will Always Love You to like some high school janky production of like In Memoriam of the Avengers.
Yeah.
And then it just starts kicking off
with a bunch of like Getty images, and I'm like, oh my gosh. From like a video editor standpoint, I'm like, no.
They did a good job of that.
The grainy vision shot in there too, with like everybody where they lined
well,
it up.
Cause you'd have to imagine he's not one of the more photographed like Avengers. So it makes sense. It was a cool little piece of detail.
It's funny. I know this is either reading between the lines or reading too far into it. I'm not sure. But when they did start off with that Whitney Houston song, I couldn't help but to feel that maybe in a different way, it was a little bit dedicated to Stan Lee as well, since he passed away. You know, so, and because they played it literally during, you know, the Marvel intro where it's still all red and it's flipping through the comic book panels and stuff.
Yeah.
So you know, being
possibly.
The person that I am, I kind of took
that.
It a little bit,
yeah.
A little bit deeper.
Well, Grandpa's passed on, so
yeah, Grandpa Stan.
He's our grandpa.
So I was going to say when we were talking about before, what I wanted to say when we were in no spoiler zone was while I think this is the best Peter Parker and Spider-Man, but I think everybody else around him is just weak. I'm least impressed with the assisting cast. Okay. You know, I don't like MJ too much.
Okay. Ooh, I would like to know why.
She's awkward, too awkward.
Oh, so
like,
you want
scary
her to be a little
awkward.
More? You want her to be a little more comic book?
No, I want her to be like. No, I don't want her to be, you know, like an actress, you know, with a bubbly personality. But she's the awkwardness is way over the top.
It would be one thing if it was just like socially awkward to an extent, and you grow out of it, but. At this stage, I think the awkwardness is just so overwhelming that it takes over when they're both in the same scene. It takes over a lot of whatever characteristics you're supposed to be focusing on with Peter Parker, and you only see MJ's like being super awkward. Like the whole Black Dahlia thing, like how many times do we have to hear that the whole Black Dahlia thing is based on a murder?
The murders. Like, yeah, we get it. You're a creepy girl. You like the murders and stuff. We get it.
And mind you,
just put her in a Ramones t-shirt and give her a normal like.
No, it was the Women's Vote shirt, and I liked it better.
I just, you know what? It's I get it. It's the younger version of the extreme feminist perspective that we have in the adults like nowadays. I get that. But I think there's, to an extent, you have to learn to even out a scene or even out characters to where there's not so much of one particular quality that can come off as almost offensive. Like, you take anybody who actually believes and has those types of beliefs, you know, whatever it may be, and they see this being portrayed by a 16-year-old kid who just does it willy-nilly, I don't know, in my opinion, I think that could come off as like a little inconsiderate.
Yeah, I think that's kind of part of, because I can see mm-hmm. what you're saying, your point. The era that this type of movie is, you're talking about like the John Hughes and everything, that era
it was
film.
Hughes.
But that played more on tropes and stuff like that and kind of stereotypes. So I think it would be that much harder to be like true to that vibe mm-hmm. if they didn't kind of make it a little bit, because if you look at everybody, like everybody's a little overt. MJ's a little overly awkward. Peter's a little overly shy. Mm-hmm. Hey, I got this is the plan. Yeah, we gotta.
Why
do this
did it
this
sound
this?
Like him? That was really scary. That
Dang,
really
if
did.
Something
I'm
ever happens,
Stark. You know. But anyway,
somebody clip that.
But
send
you know,
that over to Kevin Feige.
Hey. Hey, you can hire me for anything. Well, almost anything.
I'm
negotiable.
Like, Harvey Weinstein went to jail for that, so you better cool it there, buddy.
No deals with old Harv. Oh, no. But I think you have to kind of play into that just a little bit. You know what I mean? If you're going to be true to that era, I would say this. The character that she... It's not Mary Jane Watson. Let's go ahead and put that out there.
Yeah.
It's not.
No.
Like, now, that was initially my problem with it, is that she's not Mary Jane Watson. Because mm-hmm. I like Mary Jane Watson, and I want to see Peter Parker and Mary Jane Watson because I like Spider-Man. But here's the thing. This is a different universe. It's not the one from the animated series. It's not the one from the comics. The character that she plays, I do enjoy her portrayal of this Michelle. Is that the actual name? I do enjoy the portrayal of this character. It's just that this character is not Mary Jane Watson. It is MJ. And the role that she has makes sense because, again, same thing. This movie is... You know, in a sense, it's for anybody who enjoys it. But if a corporation has to create a demographic and target them, it's for younger teens. So they're making these characters more modernized and kind of closer to, even down to Peter's broken phone on his screen. Mm. He's supposed to be a technological genius. And we heard how he was talking to Mysterio. The kid can either fix the damn screen himself or he knows where to go to get it fixed. Yeah. But they do little things like that to make him relatable. So it's the same thing with the MJ character. They created a character named MJ. They made her, you know, in ways relatable to either a young girl that someone knows or that young girl, and then they kind of let it be that.
Hmm.
And so that's my take on it. Oh, as far as the rest of the cast, because now you're talking the rest of the cast, I think same thing. I think everybody just is tropey, but if you look at everybody's tropes and their stereotype, I actually think everybody knocked it out
they
of
match,
the park.
Yeah, I think they match really well into their stereotypes. And with regards to MJ, I appreciated in this that we were able to see more of her. She wasn't just the weird, awkward girl in the corner with we're not doing that. Like,
they kind of had to hide her in the first one because they were trying to hide that she's the MJ. But now that the cat's out the bag.
So now she's the awkward girl in front of the camera, is what
you're
saying.
But that's also, I mean, and Chat brought it up, like, you weren't awkward in 10th grade? Like, come on.
No,
like not at check yourself.
That, I was very popular in 10th grade, so I just...
I'm not even going to...
I think Flash is another disappointing one.
Oh, Flash was just too much.
Anytime he had any lines,
Here's the question then. So how is Flash Thompson okay to be, you know, why is he more than enough, but then the MJ character is not?
As far as what?
Well, no, because you said that.
I like her. I like her in, so let me finish that. I like her in this because I've been able to separate that she's not the hey tiger MJ.
Yeah.
She's not traditional. And so in looking at that, we're giving a brand new space because Andrew Garfield had Gwen Stacy.
Right.
And so this is a different, it's yes, Peter Parker by name, but it is not Peter Parker. I don't know if we're going to see down the line that it's Peter, the, you know, he builds up, takes over Avengers Tower, and it's the Peter Parker, I can't even remember the thing, where he's super duper smart and he's now a billionaire and he becomes the next quote unquote Tony Stark. This gives space for Michelle, MJ, to exist in the world where she's awkward. She's trying to deal with whatever her situation is because, when they have that moment in the vault where they're all telling, like, their... what they believe is to be their truth, she's like, I tell the truth at whatever cost anyone around me and I don't care if they get hurt. And that's like, I don't know if it's that sudden she's going to have her light bulb moment and she's going to connect or how that's going to work, but... She matches an awkward tone, and now he also has another confidant besides May, Happy, and Ned, who Ned was overly tropey.
Ned's a terrible friend. Yeah. He's such a terrible
He's funny,
friend.
Though. Like, I found like the parts that made me laugh the most were him and his girlfriend.
Betty.
Like,
yeah. Oh, that was Betty Brant. That's my favorite twist of the movie, because what was supposed to be the twist, like, I saw it coming from 10 miles away. I'm sure most people did, but that was my surprise twist. I liked that one. I was like, oh. And it's the same thing. Like, it was a twist that I liked. I enjoyed their little, you know, romance. Their yeah. their breakup was fling.
Perfect.
Yeah. Even down to the break, they broke up perfectly too. It was just like,
I don't know about y'all. Funny.
We don't,
but
don't.
Breakout for me were the teachers. I mean,
oh.
For real.
Oh, J.B. Smith.
Like, my wife pretended to be blipped, and she went and left me off. for my hiking instructor or whatever. And
we even had a fake funeral.
The science teacher who's like, oh, you want my scientific reason for all this?
Witches.
Like, seriously, those guys, for the amount of time that they were in the film, yeah, they honestly gave a lot of levity to certain situations that weren't so, you know, monotone in terms of like the yes, you're expecting Spider-Man to do things, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. But with Ned being him and MJ Betty. Being her, you had these great breaks in between where the teachers were just being ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like halfway through, I turned and looked at Spencer and I'm like, I would never, ever let my kids go across the street with these teachers.
Yeah.
Like, let alone to cross the sea to, you know, another place.
Right.
So Venice. But that was one of like the highlights too as well.
That's true.
I do agree with you about Flash Thompson. I didn't really I'm kinda getting over Flash Thompson. I know they're trying to build something with him, like the whole you know, he's his parents are never there. And like if you look at one of the scenes where when you can tell like he's trying to text his mom, I haven't heard from you, mother, you know, how is father doing or whatever. And then
planting all those seeds.
Yeah, I don't know
Father
what that
didn't come, mother didn't come this time or whatever he said at the end.
I hope they're not steering towards like a symbiote. Better not touch that kid.
No, oh heck no!
In any movie,
what?
No, it was Eddie that was Sandman.
Eddie Brock. Yeah, no, Eddie. He wasn't Sandman.
Eddie Brock was Venom. Yeah.
Then who am I thinking of that was Sandman?
Sandman
animated.
In the animated cartoon?
Yeah.
It was still the same guy. It was the thief.
Name, the thief dude. Oh, I forget his name.
He's, yeah.
Wait, I can't brain right tired. Must I, find.
I liked the...
Chat,
the
help
last,
us out.
Yeah, chat knows. The last Spider-Man movie, though, I think was better than this one.
Oh, Homecoming?
Yeah.
Keaton.
Oh, dude, you Keaton. Can't do... You can't. You cannot do bird, any better than, like, Michael Keaton.
Michael Keaton.
And all he had to do was just turn around at Spider-Man and say...
I'm
Batman.
I like that. I'll kill you.
Yeah.
And everyone you love.
It was
seriously.
So, oh, God.
Like, well, and then you take Homecoming, and the entire twist of realizing that the girl that he likes is the daughter of his villain at the time. That whole twist was like so. I didn't see it coming.
That was a damn good twist.
It was a hella good twist
and a great scene in that in the back of that car.
Oh, the tension!
No coincidence that M. Night Shyamalan comes out with a really good movie right after that. He's like, I've got it.
I don't think any moment in this movie was as good as that car ride scene.
Yeah, no.
That was tense. It, like, even in a movie that had comedy and all the stuff that you want in a superhero,
Flint Marko. Thank you. No, we're looking for the character's name. Sorry.
Flint Marko. Oh,
that's the name
of
the thief.
Keep going, Corey. Yeah.
No, that was it. That was it. I just think that's the original.
And even with the twist in this film, the fact is that you know enough about the character. So here's the thing. We live in an age where we are overly saturated with information. And we can constantly have comic books at our, you know, at our beck and call with our phones.
Or a chat. Or a chat room here
that
can give us
Google
information.
And fingers.
Exactly. And we have all that at our disposal. Anybody who has any inkling of who Mysterio is or has access to the internet can look up the origins of Mysterio and get Quentin Beck, and you can get all the information and kind of see the trails that they're following to create the story that they're using for this one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I don't think this was a twist at all.
No.
If you went into this movie not thinking Mysterio was going to be a villain, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Because
you were an idiot.
you had to
find out this way.
Or you have no idea exactly Spider-Man in any way, shape, or form, and you just showing up.
Yeah.
Like which, I said, which, an idiot. Which, you know, hey, I'll say this, though, because I think about the casual. I always think about the casual fan, because I know I'm not. and you know you that you know you need them to show up for things to be successful. But how do you think it hit people that really didn't know?
I think it honestly, because look, here's the thing. Jake Gyllenhaal was not subtle at all in this movie. Like, there were times where he was like talking to him and he came off like smarmy. Like, he was like pushing Peter to like just give up, Peter. Just give up your suit. Don't even, just be a 16-year-old kid. You don't have to do this crap. Or like, he was like looking at him and like, oh yeah, and like giving this weird looking smile. And I'm like, there were times where I'm like, yeah, you know, that's just too much of a giveaway. Like, I don't know if they told Jake Gyllenhaal, like, play the villain, but tone it back like 1%.
Yeah.
And it just seemed very much of a giveaway to me.
Well, if we're looking at the, put on my comic book glass here. If we're looking at the traditional Mysterio, he's a failed actor.
He's a failed special effects.
No, he's a failed actor with an expertise in special effects. And so his entire thing and most of his run is he's constantly making up these absolutely ludicrous storylines where he tricks Spider-Man into believing that he's 6 inches tall and he traps him in like this little mini set. Like, it, like it's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And they're all over the top convoluted storylines, which when we get farther down into different sections of the MCU where Mysterio actually is a threat, like Old Man Logan is one of my
favorite. Like the comic Marvel comic book universe.
Yeah.
Okay. Not universe. MCU. Just
Marvel comic universe.
Yeah,
I said it correctly. Whatever. So, yeah, whatever, bro.
Whatever.
So, in this, it was because I already went in, I knew exactly what his history was, and seeing him overact only made me go, okay, he's trying to somewhat stay true to that essence, but it feels, like you said, so schmarmy and so truly convoluted that you're just like, okay, where's the catch? Like, he's you know, you could just give me this. Oh no.
Yeah.
Never apologize for being the smartest one in the room.
Like, okay.
I really did enjoy like, so I'm pretty tough on the Marvel villains and I think there's only been a handful that are really good.
Yeah.
And this one was not great, but what redeemed it was just kind of how cool
the
powers were justified.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like the drones that were like actually it doing the damage to the buildings and stuff. You're like, oh, it's just illusions, but it's just
so spoiler drones. Alert to anybody who hasn't caught on quite yet. Yes, Mysterio is the villain.
Yeah.
And he does.
And if you just figured that out, you are an idiot.
You've not been watching cartoons.
Yeah.
But it's like, the good thing about this Mysterio is that it's based in realism. It's not like this isn't a supervillain from another, like they play it out, like another universe who has these weird, crazy powers.
No, and mysticism or mysticalness. It's exactly. All just technology.
Is he from the 616? Was he claimed to be from the 616?
He claims to be.
Because we're the 619.
He claims that we are Earth 616. He claims to be from 619.
Aye.
But we're actually Earth 199999. In the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Take so that for your comic book brain there.
A little Easter egg, I guess.
Well, I mean, it was that... That was one of the disappointments of the movie to me, especially kind of with knowing that.
Yeah.
Is that there isn't an officially established multiverse.
And that's what I was saying. Like, that kind of bursted my bubble to realize, like, seeing all the trailers talk about Earth 616 and going into this multiverse, you know, theory and this idea that there are multiple, you know.
And Parker got excited. And
when I got excited, I was watching the trailer and got excited because it means that, like, the repercussions from Endgame are going to be slightly touched upon, which would have given this movie much more weight if that was actually the truth. Sadly, it wasn't. And they try to rectify it by adding like people, and this is where I got to give it a little bit of props, where they add a couple of the people from the previous films as part of Quentin Beck's little posse.
Story,
like the professor, the scientist who couldn't create the arc reactor that Iron Man made in Iron Man 1.
Obadiah Stane.
With scraps! In a cave! In a cave, man!
I like the callback to Quentin Beck being behind the BARF technology.
Which was in Civil War.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I enjoyed how they tied that in.
Yeah.
So it all kind of came together in a cool way. So I don't think the villain was bad. This movie was good. I just think it was overhyped for
good.
I think people were just saying it was, you know, the best thing since Endgame, and it's just not. It's middle of the road.
And in all honesty, like, I agree 100% with you, because I know where you two, where your perspectives are, and that's great. You can have it. But the fact remains is that... Well, I wasn't going to take it from you. I was going to just let you know.
I have a bottle. I'll just take you when I'm mad.
But the fact remains is that for me, and I'm assuming Corey as well, like, hearing from people who have seen it, who have hyped it so much that it's at the level where the expectations of this film have to meet this particular requirements. Anything less than that is essentially a failure. And it does. It falls short from that ladder, I guess you could say, or those expectations.
And being in the middle of the pack in Marvel movies, in my opinion, is like still really good, because there's only a couple movies they made where I was like, I don't want to see that one again. Like, I'll see this one again. I thought it was good. I'm worried about the future of it.
Really?
Well, I was until the ending scenes, for sure.
Okay.
We could talk about those actually.
Before we do, I want to jump back to a few things.
Please.
I want to jump back to Mysterio for a second. I loved Jake Gyllenhaal's performance, because he is a great actor.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't like how they used the Mysterio character. Yeah. I almost didn't like anything about it, actually.
Yeah.
Like, almost not a single thing.
Just because it wasn't true to the original?
Well, because he was a hologram.
He
was essentially
so
a hologram. There was no Mysterio. It was just a holographic image that they were projecting.
And the suit, which I will bring it up all day. The costuming for that was absolutely just beautiful to look at.
But it wasn't real in the film.
In being used.
I mean, it was.
There was. Remember, he did have.
He did have a
practical suit, because that was, what's her name.
She was over here trying to get the wrinkles out.
Yes, Janet. I'm going to need the cape.
I might be shaking hands with the queen today, or whatever.
Yeah.
But no, my problem with it, was kind of what you said. It wasn't actually Mysterio. Mm-hmm. It was kind of the same thing that one of the things that I could not stand about Iron Man 3, with the whole Mandarin being Trevor.
That's very similar.
Okay, that's your Mandarin problem. He and I have a fight on this all
day. I absolutely abhor Iron Man 3.
Yeah,
and I think it's a joke. And I think...
Only reason it made a billion is because it came after Avengers.
Exactly. And I feel like, there's no redeeming quality of that movie.
Okay, they set
the
rules
in
this galaxy.
It's Aldrich Killian.
In this cinematic universe, you know, like, the powers are still kind of far and few between. There's been no, like, big mutant thing yet, you know, so just random people have powers. Mm-hmm. So if you have to justify how he has these abilities, whatever. I thought that was a clever way to do it. Mm-hmm. But the way they pulled off the scene, I think my favorite scene of the whole movie was probably that dream sequence fight.
Yeah.
Like the first one.
Oh,
the first really
the
good
first one.
One?
Oh, yeah.
The illusion.
Queen. Yeah, the illusion fight.
Yeah.
Where he ends up leading him to the train.
To the train.
The special all of the special effects were incredible in the whole movie. I don't like the story behind why he does it. How they pulled him off and how they looked, incredible.
Well, and even at that too, if it was actually him in the in the suit having the abilities to do that, like on his person, rather than it being like Corey behind the scenes over here and he's projecting, you know, himself being a superhero on the front lawn, like two different things.
Right.
And I think that was one of the things that really took away from me hoping to see more of that character being actually portrayed.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't like the backstory of all the people, and it took a whole team, and, you know.
But that, I think, also was calling to the fact that Iron Man, if we look at Tony Stark, he was doing it basically on his own. He built the help that he needed. Mm-hmm. And it took a team of 30 to 40 people to even pretend to be at that level, which says that it takes, you know, it takes a village to raise a
Mysterio.
to raise a faux superhero.
I thought that scene where they kind of revealed the origins of all of the henchmen.
That was cool.
No, I actually didn't like that. I felt that was out of place. Like, I feel like the movie was, you know, one direction and one style, you know, and then it went to there, and then it turned into, like, some, you know, kitschy, like, mobster show. A very awful imitation.
They pulled it
of
off,
Goodfellas.
See?
Yeah. Couldn't have done it without Jimmy Fingers over here.
Right.
Jimmy Fingers says his little catchphrase. Jack got sneaky fingers. And they show him steal a candy bar.
Okay, Dan Harmon over there.
That's what I mean. I didn't like the committee, you know, to be Mysterio. I just didn't like it.
Like, if it had been him with that technology and him figuring out a way to do it on his own, and ultimately creating the ability to do it on his person,
yeah,
like that would have been cool. Right. That would have made more sense towards the, like, whatever technology he had, he's essentially, you know, utilizing it to the best of his abilities and whatnot. Yeah. Like, there was still a progression. It wasn't just the same technology from way back when, back in Civil War, which it literally is. It's the same technology. No progression has been made on it. Yeah. Other than making it mobile on these drones.
Yeah.
Which the drones were Stark to begin with.
Yeah, which the drones were Stark technology. Mm-hmm. So
I kept expecting a Justin Hammer joke somewhere in there.
Mm. I would have taken that.
You find
Love
out
Sam Rockwell.
Mysterio is actually working for Justin Hammer.
Yes, please.
The whole time.
I think this one had one of the more significant end scenes. So the first end scene we get is the one where you discover that throughout the duration of the entire movie, this is a major spoiler. But
we're talking about end credit scenes.
Yeah, end credit scenes.
Well, real quick before we do, my biggest and my truest and biggest hang up of this entire movie, spoiler alert to everyone who hasn't seen the film yet.
Oh no.
Is them killing off Mysterio.
Mm. Oh yeah, yeah, he did.
Like, he's dead.
Yeah, he did.
And is this that an makes illusion? That makes no. Well,
they even made sure to be
is
like,
this an illusion?
"Is this an illusion?"
Yeah,
no, it is like, not. This guy is dead.
Yeah,
and he seemed to be pretty okay with it. Like,
yeah, he was like, you know, we got to give him something to believe in, even if whatever, like, before he passes. And I'm like, dang, that was dark.
Yeah, if that dude died on Batman's watch, like, we would have had to have a whole nother movie with him grieving, you know, that he accidentally killed a guy.
True.
You know, Curtis was telling us about the, you know, the storyline where he had a suit that could reflect bullets,
yep,
but he doesn't use it because it could hit a child or something.
Because it pinged off.
The Gotham Knight.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. So, yeah. Like, hearing that about Batman's character and being like, oh, he really doesn't want to kill people, and that Peter Parker killed the guy, is like,
Well, Peter Parker
want to go web-sling
Peter him? Parker didn't kill him, though.
No. It was the drones.
It was the drones, because remember, he told the drones to fire.
Saved him.
No, Edith.
The hell he could have.
I saw him dodge so many of those bullets, like, in that hallway.
He
didn't catch one of those.
So Mysterio, so just for people in context, Mysterio is in this walkway with Peter Parker at the other end of the hallway, and he tells the drones to... He's in a motion capture suit.
I did appreciate that.
That was cool.
He tells the drones who are there with him to fire at Peter Parker, and they say they won't because he's too close to... He's close to proximity of the... He tells them override, fire, whatever, so Peter Parker does all his things, and he ends up knocking one of the drones into disorientation, turning around and firing towards Quentin Beck.
Spider-Man killed him.
There you go. Spider-Man killed him.
Yeah, but this is not a Dark Knight scenario where if you're in the Bat-Fam and you kill people, you're exiled for a couple of years, and then you come back, you know, and it's like, hey.
Homicide, murder, they're both the same thing.
Batwoman got her butt kicked off that team.
Right.
How did we jump to DC?
Well, he made a Batman
comic
reference.
Book nerds, I tell you.
we live and breathe. My big hang-up before we jump to end credits. Mm. My big hang-up wasn't just Mysterio. I love Samuel L. Jackson, but this was jarring because, and we talked about this before the show, that he was playing a version of somebody playing him, so it felt very staggered, where you're like...
Well, that's what I wanted. See, why you guys cut me off? That's why I've been hosting a show for 500 goddamn episodes, so when I'm trying to steer us somewhere, I'm thinking steps ahead.
I'm just...
And that's why I wanted to go to this one, because...
I just wanted to talk about Mysterio.
Hey,
I'm leading in.
This isn't Filmlosophers, all right?
Hey, you know what?
I'm leading in.
Do you see Filmlosophers? Do you see a sign on my... Garage
Wait,
that said,
isn't he part of your
Death
studio?
Film Philosopher.
I was gonna say though, I don't see VGB though anywhere.
Tarantino.
Anyway, so. I'm leading in. I'm leading in with saying that it was.
So there was end credit scene. Amy, this is not the Dames of Destruction.
The Dames of Destruction.
For
the
record,
wrestling team.
I'm the distracted Dame. So let's keep going.
This is not Capeless Comic Book Corner.
We have a corner.
This is video game bang.
That's very meta. Used to be in that podcast.
Used to produce that podcast too.
Steps ahead. No, I wanted to talk about this end scene because it could open up a broader conversation about the entire movie, and so we find out.
I just wanted to cover Mysterio. That's all. All right, that was it.
I just want.
She went over.
I want pictures of Spider-Man.
So we find out that Nick Fury the whole time and Hill were Skrull. And that Nick Fury is somewhere off the world, off planet, with an entire base station of Skrull, kind of like running shit.
Right.
So that kind of goes back, and that's what I was saying. I think it was the most significant, because when you think of it that way, through that scope, it justifies a lot of things that were pissing me off in the movie.
About Samuel L. Jackson.
Yeah, and they did this to him in Captain Marvel, which I hated. It's how they made him so amateur and a joke when he's actually supposed to be the most.
He wasn't that dude yet, though. That was.
I understand the argument.
I know.
But
it would almost. I would say it almost would be. I think it would be. I think they would have messed it up if they just made him normal Fury.
I don't know way though. Back then. You got young looking Fury mm-hmm. on like running old man Sam Jackson in those scenes.
Yeah.
If you ever look at, if you pay attention on Captain Marvel, like when he's running, he runs like old.
Like an old guy.
It's like, but he's supposed to be young. So I just funny thing.
I got bad knees.
I agree. I think how much time passed in between that Nick Fury and mm-hmm. Avengers Nick Fury?
Hmm.
Not much time.
Not much.
No, hold on. No. When did Iron Man?
Oh, so 5 years from the blip. So 5 years, and then
don't even count that. Just count first Avengers.
Yeah, first Avengers. What year was that?
2007.
Chat, you got this.
2007
sounds about right.
So it would have been like 10 years?
No, because this happened in the 90s.
2012.
Let's say
2012.
Okay, 2012.
Chat on.
So
on
7 years
uh-huh.
in between. So that 7 years of progress going from that guy
no,
to.
No. 2012. That Avengers happened in 2012. This movie happened in the 90s.
Okay.
So that's at least 20 okay. some years.
All right. Gosh, that makes us a little better. Old.
But still, even in this one,
yeah.
I was with how the last Nick Fury was and how mm-hmm. this one was getting duped all the time and wasn't, you know, smart enough to figure out anything out.
Yeah.
Surfboard.
I was pretty like, all right, you're just really running this character into the ground. So that scene did like kind of make up for me some of the movie that I was upset about.
Because throughout the movie, Samuel L. Jackson completely doesn't seem like himself. And mm-hmm. he kind of plays it off as, you know, being gone for 5 years, you know, before, you know, the blip or before the snap, you know, I used to know where everyone was at. I used to be able to get in contact with whatever.
And that's what I was thinking. Nick Fury would never say that. Nick Fury knows everything.
Like, yeah.
Even at that point, if he was saying that, it was to trick somebody or to make him seem like he didn't know.
Especially if he's revealing this to a kid he's just barely meeting for the first time.
With the door open to that room, which drove me out. That was the first thing. So in that sequence, when we first finally see Nick Fury after Spider-Man has been, quote unquote, ghosting him, he goes in there. He tranks Ned, and Peter Parker standing there with a toothbrush in his mouth, and the door to the damn room is wide open, and he's carrying on a conversation at same level, same tone level, same volume, and I'm just like, no, stop.
But I have to say that scene, though, rectifies all the missteps that they had with...
No, it wasn't.
The door was not closed. It was open, which is why...
And then he had the 3 or 4 knocks, and he's like, if somebody knocks... He's like,
someone else comes through that goddamn door...
Yeah, we're going to another funeral.
We're going to another funeral. Yeah,
yeah.
I liked, and it also makes the that line about Captain Marvel make a little bit more sense too.
Don't invoke her name.
Yeah,
when Spider-Man is trying to figure out like someone else could do this, not him, and he starts listing different
Avengers,
heroes and Avengers. Yeah,
Thor, he's off planet. Captain Marvel, don't invoke her name. You know, from Fury, that would be just like a funny thing for him to say, but when you find out it was that scroll, you're like, oh, he means it. Like,
yeah.
He's...
And oddly enough, I think in this movie, I think Samuel L. Jackson cusses way more than all of the MCU appearances he's ever had combined.
Really? Yeah.
Like
he said, bitch, please. Yeah,
bitch, please. You've been to space.
Yeah, that was good.
By accident. My life.
I don't know. I think that makes it okay, but it's creating a larger question. And I don't know if Sony can make good on it, in all honesty. Like, because we know this is a Sony... you know, tight production, and Sony's been notorious for jumping first without knowing where they're going to land, because everybody's seen Kevin Feige's face in all the press junkets. Like, what'd she just say? What's going to happen? What?
Yeah.
Like, so there's like this perception or this theory that it's leading towards like the creation of S.W.O.R.D. Then again, it's Sony, and Sony is... they're kind of hitting that like normal level of like creating good movies, not including all their bad movies.
Yeah.
So I don't know. This is kind of an iffy place for me.
They got Marvel Studios watching them closely. Like,
I mean, Marvel could just take it over if they want to pursue it.
Yeah,
because I mean, it's
so when you say it's like a good Sony movie, it's like them making the pottery with the ghosts, you know.
Yeah.
You're talking about Patrick Swayze.
Yeah, Patrick Swayze's actually doing it.
Scene.
What do you think about what that says about the future of the Marvel movies, Curtis, with
Sword?
Know, Fury up there with an army of Skrull?
I mean,
what's he really up to?
It's Sword. You know, which is the natural progression after S.H.I.E.L.D. and, you know, discussing how they're going to have, you know, as it's been said from the meetings and stuff like that, they're going to have a set of heroes that are going to be more earthbound going forward, and they're going to have a set of heroes that's going to be more in space for the cosmic. Mm-hmm. And Nick Fury, with Sword, he could be the in-between that kind of keeps, he's the conduit for communication on when, you know, if they need extra help or if they need extra help. So the natural progression works, but at the same time, still, like, even that's fairly vague in the scheme of things. Mm-hmm. Like, that's a framework, that's ballpark, but specifically what he's going to do, what role is Sword, you know, going to play, that's about as much as I got. I told Malik when we went to go see it, I said, I could tell you what happens in the very end credit scene right now, and it wouldn't even be a spoiler because it doesn't, they didn't have it lead to anywhere in the movie. So this is, you know, this is all speculation, best guesses and whatnot.
Yeah.
And then the other one, of course, has more impact on this direct Spider-Man universe that they've created. Mm-hmm. So he gives MJ a web-sling ride.
Yeah.
And then they land.
Which is hilarious.
And again, this is kind of like immersion breaking for me because he picks her up in the middle of the street, you know, and they're just like, oh, now MJ is getting, you know, lifted. And then he drops her in the middle of a crowded street. Yeah.
They picked her up in the middle of the street.
Yeah.
He literally lands and she's like, oh, you're late.
And they told all the extras not to look at what was going on. Like, not one person was like, holy shit, that's Spider-Man, you know, like taking videos of it, which I hate that part. So she's not like, it wasn't like a night swing, you know, or something where they can kind of keep under wraps. But whatever.
Like broad daylight.
You wanted some wet.
Broad goddamn daylight.
I wanted an upside down kiss. No, I thought this was.
You wanted Kirsten Dunst to come back, reprise her role.
Yeah. You just wanted the
hashtag
shirt.
Bring me my MJ.
No, I was.
She's your
I thought that was dumb. Nope. But then what happens is there's breaking news and J. Mm-hmm. Jonah Jameson.
Which, yes.
That was
J. Jonah Jones. Alex Jones.
Portrayed by. Portrayed by J.K. Simmons, the original.
That's so good.
The only J. Jonah Jameson I will ever need
life. It's true.
He comes on and he talks about how Mysterio is the greatest hero of all time, of course, just because that's what he does.
Turn the frogs gay! Yeah.
And he says there's this tape discovered from Mysterio, and I guess his people doctored what Hollywood magic they had left.
Yeah.
And they WikiLeaked Spider-Man's identity.
Yeah.
And basically in the video, he says that Spider-Man just came out of nowhere and killed me.
Yeah.
So paints him to be the villain and then drops his... And his name is Peter Parker.
And they put up the picture, too.
And
they showed his picture.
Which is his yearbook photo.
There's some real duality on this for me. This whole movie is kind of a story of duality for me because I had to place it in one place and realize, you know, this is the reality of what this is, while also kind of divorcing myself from some of my expectations and some of the things that kind of did bug me. But, you know, I mean, again, these movies, they're not real life. They are, they've made them live action to the point where we want to attach them a little bit more to reality than we really should. There was tons of stuff on the second watch that I said does not make sense because I know of the Skrull thing and everything. But I'll say this, I like the fact that it was doctored footage, aka fake news, because deep fakes, you know, is kind of like a real thing that's going on right now. So it's very topical that they would, you know, have a video where it was doctored up and it made Spider-Man look like he killed who the world thought was the hero. So that was cool. Now, the part that I didn't like it is it was just another unwelcomed byproduct of not having a real Mysterio. Like, since it wasn't a real Mysterio, this is kind of what we have to do to make his, you know, kind of lame death mean something. We got to out Peter Parker.
Okay.
So, I mean, cool that it set stuff up, but it felt more like a hey, the ending was kind of a soft ending, so we'll give you a gut punch before you walk out the door.
You mean it was a ham-fisted segue?
A ham-fisted segue, or more like a hammer-fisted segue. So, yeah, it just, obviously we know the effect of it, but yeah. From a story writing perspective, it didn't really have a lot. I didn't see the need for that to happen.
Yeah, and I feel like a lot of that is going to lead into a direction that I don't even think Sony knows right now.
Right.
Because, number one, they haven't even announced any movies for Phase 4 for Marvel. Sony has
in August.
Well, there's definitely going to be a Spider-Man.
I mean, well, here's the thing, though. When? And then in between that, what are you going to do with Spider-Man? Because now he's on the lam.
Yeah.
So what do? You know, there's a lot of questions that because of that scene, because for the fact of the mere impact that it has rather than the implications long term, which is one of the issues that Sony has always come up against. They're always more of like a, well, we're in the moment. We're going to do this. Bam, drop it like it's hot.
Yeah.
You know, they're going to do that as opposed to Marvel, who had Endgame already planned back when they released the first Iron Man.
Okay.
Like, you have the long game versus right. the wow factor at the moment.
Yeah.
And I think this is one of those instances where we're going to have to just see within the next few months, because you got some of the biggest conventions coming up, the biggest events in terms of Disney, in terms of pop culture, in terms of movies that are coming up with San Diego Comic-Con, D23, yep. You know, and a lot more information coming out right before you have Oscar season to get attention. If they don't announce something in the next couple of months as to what they're doing, that literally is going to go nowhere. And after that, people are going to kind of be like, oh, yeah, that happened, right?
So you're saying they're just going to lose momentum.
They're totally going to lose momentum.
I'm just worried about them moving to the next stage of Spider-Man's story where he's outed. Like,
yeah.
Like, I feel like there's so much more character development right. and stories to tell.
He's right. only 16
with him dealing with but him hiding his identity and the repercussions. And
no, that's what I'm saying, he hasn't even graduated and they're getting to this place. It's like there's still a shit ton of like storylines that they could totally and that was one of the things that I was appreciating up until that for these two movies, for Homecoming and for Far From Home. And I had mentioned this to you. Mm-hmm. We had a big conversation before we got on. But I was mentioning this to Corey. I was like, that's one of the things I really appreciated about these movies, Far From Home and Homecoming, is that you were getting that true high school version of Peter Parker. You were really getting a good sense of this young kid who is totally socially awkward on his own, extremely smart.
Right.
And we're going to get that storyline. We're going to get to see that. And now we're at a point where he has no choice but to grow up now.
Right.
Because he's going to be on the lam. He's going to be outed. His aunt's going to be targeted. Everybody that he loves is going to be, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
And it totally removes that opportunity.
It's a cool story for Peter Parker when you feel like you've earned it. And I don't feel like this Spider-Man has earned that yet.
No, I don't even read it to that point. Yeah, it's like that's too much problem too soon.
Yeah.
Put that farther down the line. I know we're going to his third movie, but
the Kingpin, like, the first one was, you know, Spider-Man is New York, it feels like. And we got the first movie, which was that.
Yeah.
And then we go to this abroad thing, and I just kind of wasn't a fan
of European vacation.
Yeah, I wasn't a fan of bouncing between the countries with the students and the operas and, like, all that kind of stuff. I just wish it could have been at home and just a really good story with a really good villain.
Yeah.
And not mix in all these other elements. And then, you know, take us on vacation on the next one and wait to
fully establish the character you have in his own world before you start, you know, relocating him into other environments to create stories there.
Yeah.
Like we know, because he's said it a million times, that he's the friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. And to a point, that one scene that I was actually really looking forward to seeing where he's fighting all those people in the restaurant and he's telling the New York PD, like, hey, you know, well, somebody's got to do your job. He's like, well, you know, are you going to be the next? Oh, I'm going on vacation. Like, I would have loved to have seen that scene.
Yeah, we didn't get that. That's 100%. Because, and then going to what Curtis was saying about, he thinks he's the best Spider-Man, but not the best Peter Parker.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't really get those Spider-Man quips and action sequences that made the first one so good.
Like, yeah.
It was so funny, the things he says in between punching people and like, that's Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And in this one, he has a couple fights with the witches.
Yeah.
And you know, he's
with the witches.
You know, he can't talk
with the elementals.
He can't talk shit to the elementals. Yeah, or, you know, or he didn't. You know, like
that, yeah. That's
well, the other thing is, if he did and they didn't respond in any way because they're an illusion, then it kind of would have thrown off that whole thing. That's what I really think setting up Mysterio like this really took away from a. I felt like it was a detour. That was my biggest problem with the movie. That was my biggest problem with the movie, but. It's still a, like overall, all the stuff that wasn't Mysterio was all the stuff I ended up getting wrapped up in when the whole reason why I really wanted to see this was for Mysterio.
Yeah. And I think it goes back to just, sorry to cut you off, but like to what Kurt was saying earlier. Coming into this movie, you're coming in to see a Spider-Man movie. Everything else that happens is the backdrop to it.
Right.
This is not a, this, well, and mind you, if people disagree, whatever. But like, you know, this is a Marvel film. This is not being marketed by Paramount. This is not a Universal movie. This is not a, you know, the next, you know, teen heartthrob movie, whatever. This is marketed as a Spider-Man movie. This is a Spider-Man movie.
Yeah.
And his high school life is the backdrop to everything that makes him about Spider-Man. This film felt more like this is a high school movie where Spider-Man was the backdrop to everything else.
Yeah, I can
and,
see that.
You know, and it's one of those things where, yes, I appreciated everything this film tried to do, but it didn't succeed in convincing me that I was coming to see a true-to-form Spider-Man.
And see, and I think... Oh, no, 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 no. Go for it, because you've been waiting. Go for it, go
for it. Because this,
she's going to hit me. Hold on.
No, go cuddle.
Let
go
me
cuddle.
Scoot up.
You can go cuddle, get in that camera. So this is actually one of the big things that when we're talking about the transition to Phase 4 and we're talking about S.W.O.R.D. being created, that there are going to be galactic heroes and there's going to be Earthbound heroes. And especially getting in that space with the reveal of Spider-Man, we give opportunity, one, for the extended Spider-Verse to start showing up.
But we haven't established.
We haven't established. No, but because that's happened, that also means that there's a call. There's essentially a call to arm for younger heroes to show up. So in closing with Phase 3, they're saying Phase 4, especially for Earthbound, I'm looking champions. I'm looking, we're going to end up with Ultimates. We need to get Galactic back in, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, and now I'm getting closed out, but it's good because that's essentially what we're looking at, especially for Phase 4, and that we're having the gradual retirement of all of these older heroes, that the young ones need to step up, which means that if we get a Squirrel Girl, if we get... I could have sworn that in that opening sequence that the girl looked like Kamala Khan that was standing up there that was asking the questions, and I got really excited for Ms. Marvel, and then, you know, we still got the X family to come in, and, there's so much meat and content that can be spread out, but when it comes to Sony, you don't know. They're in it for the while. They're not. Yeah. Marvel is holding the leash on a very, very excited terrier that's going to piddle on your shoes.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. So thank you guys so much for listening to the Video Game Bang episode 502. We're dissecting the Spider-Man. If you enjoy the show and you want to watch or catch up on our previous episodes, most of them are up on YouTube. You can also check it out on iTunes, Spotify, Pandora, Audio Boom, Google Play. Anywhere you could find podcasts, you could find the Video Game Bang. Also, if you're in the NorCal area this Monday, we're going to be doing our trivia. It's the first Monday of every month we go do host a trivia
night.
I'm
so excited for this.
I'm actually excited for it, too.
The topic is going to be Disney this time. So all you Disney prince and princesses, get ready.
Disney villains show up.
So tell us, overall, film loss for Eddie, how many monocles you giving Spider-Man?
I give it about 3.5. And it passes for me. I give it about 3.5 because of the fact that it still serves up a much better Spider-Man than anything that the Amazing Spider-Man has done thus far.
It's not a political debate, man.
No,
I don't need your final.
No,
and a half monocles is fine.
3.5 monocles. There you go.
Amy, how many dames do you give it? How many capes?
We have no capes. We are capeless. So that's the Capeless Crusaders are capeless. So, do you know, it's a pass for me because we don't technically have a system, do we? We never have. So, no.
Amy, it can be whatever you want. Well, out of mustards, how many would you give it?
Oh, damn. I love mustard, dude. That's mean. We can't do that. Shenanigans. Do you know what? Out of microphones or spyglasses from the day, we're going to give it 3 out of 5.
Okay.
It's right in that middle area.
Curtis, running out of time.
I give it four skips out of five.
Four skips out of five. Yeah. I'm going with a 2.5.
Wow. Yeah. You said middle of the road, so that's about as middle as you get out of five. Yeah.
That is that college GPA at 2.5.
Exactly. Thank you guys so much for listening. Please, if you haven't already, check out these fine people's podcasts. The Filmlosophers are on iTunes. You can find them on VGB Studios' website.
Yes.
They're everywhere we are. And then you could also, I don't know, where can you listen to Capeless Crusaders?
Capeless is on iTunes, Podbean, Stitcher, something.
So take all the ones you could find of us and then go to like their like the B tier, and then that's where you'll find
Hey, I am a solid B plus villain, okay?
You're better than Mysterio.
He was a solid B plus villain too.
Solid B plus. All right, well, we're gonna do the after show, which is a little extended time on twitch.tv/videogame_bang. If you're not hanging out with us there on Wednesdays and Saturday nights, what are you doing with yourself? For Eddie, Amy, Curtis, my name is Corey, saying you've just been banged.